Coming up on Tech News Today, has Facebook solved mobile? Microsoft allows self-publishing to Xbox, and free Wi-Fi blankets New York City and San Francisco. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, July 25th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT7. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put them in some context for you, starting every time with the News Fuse. Top 10 stories. Let's see how I did that.
Smooth.
Ouch. Facebook had a great quarter, reporting $1.81 billion U.S. in revenue, far exceeding the $1.62 billion analysts expected, and earnings per share of 14 cents, exceeding expectations of 14 cents, but exceeding expectations of 13 cents. The
Go
big
Facebook.
News was the jump in mobile revenue, which made up 41% of total revenue, up from 40% last quarter. Facebook also saw daily active users rise 27% year over year. Monthly active users rose 21%, and mobile monthly active users rose 51% year over year.
Originally reported by Game Informer, Microsoft has confirmed it will allow independent studios to release downloadable games directly onto their systems without a publishing partner behind them, and might even be able to set their own release dates and pricing. Microsoft's Mark Whitman said in a statement to Kotaku that self-published indie games on Xbox One won't be in a separate indie section either.
The U.S. House of Representatives, by a vote of 205 to 217, rejected an amendment that would have blocked funding for the NSA program that collects data on every call made by or to a U.S. phone. The amendment would have allowed data collection if the records were part of a specific investigation. Since the amendment didn't pass, enjoy being spied on.
And there's more spying coming. CNET's Declan McCullough reports a source claims the U.S. government has demanded SSL keys from internet providers. The keys are used to encrypt connections over the web, as you probably know. The keys would let the FBI and the NSA decrypt contents of intercepted encrypted communications. McCullough contacted several tech companies, Microsoft and Google, declined to admit whether they had received such requests, but stated clearly that they have not handed over keys to any government. Facebook said they had not received any such request, but would fight it if they did.
Analog camera and film specialist Lomography has launched a Kickstarter campaign to raise $100,000 to recreate the Petzval lens. If you haven't heard of it, it was developed by Joseph Petzval in 1840. Known for artistic, dreamy effects designed for today's Canon ED and Nikon F mount cameras. The first lenses are expected to be delivered in February 2014, although Lomography says they're confident that the first 1,000 units can be shipped by December. Be a nice little Christmas present. The first 100 backers will get the lens for $300, and it will retail after that for $499.
Spanish smartphone maker Geekzphone announced it's taking pre-orders for the Peak Plus smartphone. The device runs Mozilla's Firefox OS 1.1 and has twice the RAM of the Geekzphone Peak. The Peak Plus costs €149, not including tax, and will ship mid-September. After that pre-order period, the price is expected to go up.
EU regulators and Penguin Books have reached an agreement under which Penguin will end its deal with Apple, under which no competing retailer could sell an ebook cheaper than Apple did. Penguin also offered to let retailers set prices and offer discounts for 2 years.
A new social nightlife app called Bar Eye is coming to New York, Los Angeles, Miami, Atlanta, and Austin after a successful test market in Tallahassee, Florida. Bar Eye allows you to buy drinks for friends through Facebook or to anybody checked into a Bar Eye bar. Or you can use it to buy yourself a drink without opening a tab or waiting for service. Hmm. You select your bar, you select your drink, you pay with your credit card, and then you redeem for a drink with the bartender. Drinks, of course, range in price, but deals page lists discounts and specials throughout the week.
Bar eye for the drunk guy. BlackBerry confirmed to All Things D that the company has laid off 250 employees from its Waterloo, Ontario product testing facility. The employees were part of the new product testing facility supporting research and development. Cuts were called part of the next stage of increasing efficiency and scaling the company correctly. BlackBerry cut about 5,000 jobs last year.
It's happened. The first 50-inch 4K TV that costs under $1,000. TCL announced the 7E504D 50-inch 4K TV that will have a sticker price of $999. Now, the TV comes with four HDMI ports and they all have MHL compatibility. The 7E504D will launch in the U.S. in September.
Is it made out of silly putty?
Yes, a snappy name, too. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Shutterstock.com. At Shutterstock.com, you will find, if you look, which you should, the perfect image or video for your next creative project. Whether it's for your website, or you got a publication you're putting out, you got an advertisement, you're making a video, you're any type of project, you can choose from over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. And you may be thinking, like, Tom, you're a horrible photographer. Is it stuff that you... No, it's professional photographers and artists, folks. And in fact, Shutterstock reviews every image individually for content and quality before they add it to its library. But it doesn't slow them down. They're adding like 10,000 images a day. You can choose individual image packs or a monthly subscription for the best deal. And you can download any image in any size, whatever size you need, and pay only the one price. Shutterstock gives you the images you need to bring your creative projects to the next level. They have sophisticated search tools. It's kind of impressive. You can search by emotion or color palette and then put them in a light box, share them with the folks you're working on the project with, help figure out, okay, these are the images we want. And then you download it and you just pay for the stuff you need. You try Shutterstock today. Sign up for a free account. You don't need to give them a credit card to try it out. Just start an account. Begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like. Save some favorite images to a light box to review later. And once you decide to purchase, use offer code TNT7 and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 30% off new accounts, use that offer code TNT7. We thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. All right, finishing our hat trick of British guests this week. Very happy to have Ewan Rankin, editor of the British Tech Network. If you haven't seen the British Tech Network, you're missing out, folks. Go to BritishTechNetwork.com. You got some great shows over there, Ewan. I really enjoy what thanks, you guys man. Do.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot. We try hard. We've got a lot of people that are giving of their time free of charge and doing some fantastic stuff for us.
Yeah, Ayaz is going to be on the big show.
He is, yeah.
It looks like he's coming to us from the surface of the sun today.
Yeah, it got bright in North London there.
It's hot here. I've spent the last few days working, and I've got a proper cameraman's tan that stops at my elbow.
Oh, yeah, lovely. All right, well, let's dive right in with a look at the Facebook earnings. We heard the numbers in the news fuse. CFO David Ebersman told All Things D, one of the things this quarter says to us is that news feed ads work. Stock market seems to agree. They gave the Facebook stock a nice bump this morning. It's not quite back to its IPO price, but it's getting closer. And it looks like Facebook that home no, it's still what did they call it? Taking a little longer to develop. Graph search, same thing. Instagram perking along. They're just going to let it keep doing its thing. They're not going to worry about monetizing it yet. But they're finally making some money off mobile, which was everybody's big question. Ewan, is mobile growth coming from Asia? I mean, we look at the numbers. That seems to be where they're getting a lot of the active user growth. And is that just because Asia is an open market, open for a lot of growth? Or has Facebook finally cracked this, do you think?
I think mobile generally has probably increased. I know looking at my own peer group and my wife's peer group, they've gone to using a lot more on the phone now. Spread of Android's massively helped that. She checks in on Facebook now constantly on her iPhone, hardly ever on desktop. So there's a movement of general users across from that. And the whole of the Asian continents are just massive growth areas for all social networks at the moment.
It's also interesting. I notice sometimes, not all the time, but if there's people in an Instagram picture that I take, I'll cross-post that to Facebook, mm-hmm. and I'll find that a lot of my friends who are my Instagram friends end up liking it on Facebook because you can tell the difference. And it goes into a nice little Instagram folder in my Facebook photos. And I can see Facebook sort of saying, Instagram is... It's a cool network. It's where a lot of young kids use as their primary social network. But it's working well and without actually doing too much to integrate it into Facebook, it might happen organically, especially if Facebook, if people are accessing Facebook more and more via mobile, Instagram kind of becomes part of that experience.
Yeah, Facebook's managed to put themselves on everything. We always talk about the feature phones that even have them, Java-based applications, free internet services thanks to Facebook. The fact that they have 1.15 billion active users, that number is the one that actually shocked me. Because I was thinking there has to be a point where they just stop adding people, but they still keep adding quarter after quarter, which surprises me. At some point, it's going to be everybody on Earth, if they ever go into China, that has a Facebook account. But then what happens? Then people finally have expectations that can't be matched. It'll be like, well, there's no way they can add another human being to Facebook because
pandas. Pandas on Facebook.
You're right. And Dogbook exists too.
I think the stock market, though, is going to get a little bit fed up of growth at some point and start looking for utilization figures. And if you look at, if you go back just 12 months, the Q4 earnings for 2011, 2 years nearly, they've got a similar kind of level of profit there on a massively reduced level of earnings. So it's the utilization that's the key part for them. At the moment, if they're talking about 1.5 billion users, they're extracting $1 in revenue for each of those users effectively, which they were doing far more than that before the flotation. And I find myself looking towards them, trying to find the negative in these stories. And I've got to say, well done, Facebook. You look like you're on the road to a good growth. I'm not trying to be negative, but utilization is what will give them sustainable long-term business earnings, not just making a profit, not comparing it to the last quarter when they were turds or the year or the quarter before. It's got to be long-term. It's got to show an incline of growth, which it is, but not enough.
And more so than people expected, though.
Also, the whole teen engagement is very high coming from Mark Zuckerberg. It's interesting because history shows that teen engagement never really sticks in one place for very long. The people that are teens right now grow up and maybe they're going to be loyal to Facebook, but the next generation of this is a very elusive market to try to lock down. So, and we've seen studies that go against that too, that say Facebook is not the place where teens want to hang out because that's where all their family members are.
Which is why Facebook wants to tout that so much.
Exactly.
To be like, everything you've heard is wrong. I don't think everything you heard is wrong. In fact, and like you, Ewan, I don't want to pull out a negative just to pull out a negative. But if there is one area to keep an eye on, it's those Asian growth numbers. Daily or active users in Asia grew 8.38%. Monthly active users, 6.26% in Asia. Those are much lower than their overall growth numbers, and Asia's the big growth market. They have a lot of competition out there. We've talked about Kakao, we've talked about Line, WeChat, all of those sorts of apps that they're competing with for the attention, especially of those young people. So I'm not saying it's a bad quarter at all for Facebook. It's a great quarter for Facebook, but keep an eye on those numbers. And if you see those continuing to go up or at least stable, then that's good news for Facebook as well. Microsoft just, you know, you complain about something and they just change their mind these days.
Yeah, they like to turn around things very often. So Microsoft confirmed plans that they're going to allow self-publishing on the Xbox One. They did note self-publishing won't be an option at the launch of Xbox One, but will be within 1 year of the console's launch. Microsoft's looking at a really quick turnaround for code certification. So instead of having, apparently Xbox Live Arcade was a real nightmare to have your game go through. This apparently is supposed to be much faster. Microsoft's going to be looking at high-level terms of service violations and massive bugs instead, not going through every single game like they did before. Microsoft's Mark Whitten said that every Xbox One can be used for development, which means every $500 box can be used as a debug unit instead of having to get a dev box. That's a really interesting little line they just kind of threw in there. Microsoft also says there's going to be a lot more details at next month's GamesCon. Whitten says Microsoft has a roadmap on indie development, but it's going to be rolled out in phases. So they're going to have this. It's going to be within 1 year. They're going to have phases with this as well. And so there is no need to have a third-party publisher anymore. You can do it yourself. If you remember Sony's E3 demo, we saw all the indie gamers there. They were showing off their games. Whitten said that the publishing policy wasn't a reversal. He's saying that this was a part of Xbox One the whole time. Ewan, are you buying this argument? And do you think this is going to sway indie developers back to the One?
I think that Microsoft has got a real PR problem at the moment because they've done the 180 on several things. They're talking about how successful the Surface is, but allegedly they're sitting on 6 million units that they can't even give away for review. I take everything that comes out in this as a pinch of salt at the moment. I think they know that they've got to get developers interested. If they've got nothing else, then it'll be a flop before it even sells. So it just seems like an evolutionary move that they would let developers in as quickly as possible to distribute content.
How is this not a change of policy? I mean, we heard the policy. Mm-hmm. You have to be part of a publisher to get your game on here, and now they're saying you don't. I don't understand where Witten's coming from when he says that this was the policy all along.
It sounds like he's from the Microsoft School of Speech. Like, yes, we
it's
will
a change.
Yes, we'll just tell you. We it was always our plan to do this. It'd be 1 year, but yeah, maybe at first.
We have always been at war with.
I think it's probably a little bit more of that them thinking, well, this is our policy and whatever. And then they get a lot of backlash and outcry from people saying, but that doesn't make any sense. You're just keeping out potentially really great games. And so they say, yeah, no, we didn't really want to keep out great games. We never wanted to do that.
That was never our policy.
Yeah, we're not bad people. So now it's just going to be easier for an independent publisher to be part of a platform.
Isn't the damage done already? Microsoft saying this stuff originally, saying they were going to be like this ghetto of indie games. They didn't want to have lousy systems like the PlayStation 3 would have, or PlayStation 4 would have, all of these things that who knows would be there. But Microsoft would have quality games. Now they're like, oh, yeah, we'll have indie games, and you can do it yourself, and you can use every Xbox One as a dev box. That one, to me, I still think
is huge. Do you
think
if you're a game developer, you think it's too late?
I just,
as a consumer, who cares?
I would think that Sony did a really good job at E3, patting those guys on the back, had them on stage, and Microsoft was like, we got TV! Look, ESPN! And, oh, we have games. I think that might have done enough to burn these indie gamers who don't want to, or developers. I'm not sure what Microsoft's thinking these days. Maybe it was with the metric shift? That this changed policy or this thing moved, but I don't know.
A statement of making it really easy compared to an experience of making it easy is two different things as well, though.
Yeah. All in all, good job, Microsoft, for changing the policy. Well, let's just be straight. When people complain that you had to go through a publisher before, your answer was, it shouldn't be that hard to get a publisher. Not, don't worry, we've got self-publishing in the works. It just won't be there at launch. That didn't happen until now. So
we always did that. You just didn't see it.
We've always been at war with Eurasia. All right. Blanket free Wi-Fi. Remember back at like 10 years ago, it was municipal Wi-Fi? We're finally kind of getting it.
Yeah. I mean, remember when we had Ewan go down into the tube during the Summer Olympics last year and test the Wi-Fi that London had going on as part of a promotion? Well, Sprint is the latest to reach a deal in New York City with Transit Wireless. Transit Wireless is pretty much powering wireless access underground in 277 subway stations in New York, and says it'll have 36 up and running by next year. I thought to myself, oh yeah, I was just in New York recently and you don't have service down there. That sucks. I guess Sprint is first. Well, that's just because I have Verizon. AT&T and T-Mobile actually reached deals with Transit Wireless back in 2010. So they're already covering subway stops. For whatever reason, Verizon said back in April that it was finalizing its own agreement with Transit Wireless, but we haven't seen anything official. So Sprint is, you can say that it's third, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, New York subway is vast. A lot of people spend quite a bit of time underground commuting, and certainly makes sense. And then in similar news, as far as places that people hang out, over in San Francisco, Mayor Ed Lee announced 31 San Francisco playgrounds, recreation centers, and parks are getting free Wi-Fi from Google for 2 years, basically no strings attached. Google is giving the city $600,000 as a gift. Obviously, it has to be approved. But if so, installations will start in November, be done by April of next year. And it's like just a goodwill thing. Google says, worry, we promise not to make money off of this. Obviously, it's kind of a thank you, Google. If I have to take my kid to the playground, then now I have free Google Wireless. But this is something that, again, we heard about a long time ago. In fact, there was an Earthlink Google type of relationship that was supposed to happen in the city. And our mayor at the time, Gavin Newsom, just couldn't make it happen. So I love this trend. I mean, Ewan, I don't know if in the UK there are any public parks that are boosted by Wi-Fi from a company that wants nothing in return. But I think this is just great.
Some of our public parks you can't even get in. So, no, I wouldn't worry too much. I mean, it's great that you've got your subway as keen to line with ours. Ours is still free to customers, but there's more users now. So Virgin Media's still got theirs. It's still the same fantastic 46 down, 46 up speed. So that's really good. If it keeps that kind of thing and you get that kind of utilisation, then all well and good. Google giving it away free to the parks, there's no free lunches. There's at least location data coming off that, if nothing more. So good on them, though. Well done.
Well done. I mean, Google says, sure, we won't make money. We'll just sniff out wireless. I mean,
they
can't
know where you
that.
Are, right? They put the Wi-Fi in the park, so you're in the park.
Well,
likely.
What do you do when you're out and about using the internet in say a public park? You do searches. That's what Google gets out of this. They don't have to do any sniffing or anything. Google has said this outright. We want more people to use the internet. This is why they're doing Google Fiber, because when they use the internet more, they use Google more, and we sell more ads.
It's not like they're going to.
Must be a thing. Google's 61% of North American traffic at the minute.
It wasn't 61. I don't think.
It was 25.
I think it was 25% overall of North American traffic. Yeah, it's huge. Most of that's YouTube videos of cats.
Yeah.
In HD and 4K, probably. Yeah. The New York subway system, I always love those stories because I used to remember when I go to the subway, everyone's crowded by the entrance because that's the only place you get signal. Now more and more people would be able to be in the actual tunnels instead of being blocking the entrance.
It's only all the financial guys, all the suits with their Verizon phones will be huddled around the entrance.
Yeah, the Blackberries, just right there. It's like, get out of the way. I'm trying to get by.
Blackberries. Aw, they're so cute. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, ProXPN. Save my bacon. I do a lot of traveling. I'm traveling right now, headed up to Petaluma. And when I'm in the hotel using the Wi-Fi, it's great. Nice hotel, nice free Wi-Fi. But I know that anybody on that Wi-Fi network can see my packets, can see what I'm doing. And there's lots of ways to spy on my passwords and all. I don't want any of that. So I use a VPN, a virtual private network. And the one I was using this morning was ProXPN. And you know what? What's great about ProXPN, they have multiple servers, right? So when I logged on this morning, I was like, wow, this connection seems a little slow. I wonder if it's just the Wi-Fi. So I switched servers. ProXPN, it's easy. It's a little drop-down menu. Switch to a different server location. Boom. Connection improved instantly. ProXPN is secure. It's an encrypted tunnel. All your online data passes back and forth without prying eyes being able to see it. Complete 512-bit encryption tunnel. You can bypass filtering, blocked websites, geographical restrictions, and most importantly, keep the people you don't want, the big brother in the middle attack, somebody in the chat room said earlier, I think it was Ken from Chicago, from spying on you, world-class customer support, and even Steve Gibson from Security Now gave it a great review. So go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We got a special offer, though. Use the code TNT and receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. But try it out. Go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today and for protecting my surfing this morning when I was preparing for the show. Hackers can get in your car. This is a Forbes report. What's going on here?
This is a Forbes report. DEF CON's coming up, so of course these stories are going to be coming out. Now, two guys, Charlie Miller and Chris Valasek, demoed how they could hack a car, take all kinds of control away from the driver. They took a Forbes reporter, Andy Greenberg, in this Toyota Prius, and the dashboard's pretty much all ripped out, and you can see that there's like 35 computers in there that are actually part of the car. Miller's a security officer, and in this video right now, you can see that the driver, Greenberg, is no longer has control of the steering wheel, because what the guys have done is they have tricked the car into believing it's self-parking it. So that way, it'll just move the wheel for you. So if you let go of the wheel entirely, it would actually do two complete revolutions and try to park. But the driver doesn't know what's going on because the two guys in the back are not alerting Greenberg what's going on at all. Dashboard readouts were changeable. They could do braking rapidly. They could decide to honk the horn to be annoying. Lots of different things that they could do with this car. Now, Miller and Valasek received an $80,000 grant from DARPA to find security vulnerabilities in cars. And they're going to release all their findings at DEF CON next month. And Toyota's safety manager, John Hansen, heard about this, and he's like, the company's focus is to prevent hacking from remote wireless devices outside the vehicle, because these hacks by Miller and Valasek suppose that you're in the vehicle. You have access to that. But the Forbes article does point out that there have been all kinds of hacks that get you into the car using either Bluetooth issues or even malicious MP3 files that can get you into a vehicle wirelessly, which I didn't even know about. Ewan, is it time to panic? Should we freak out about our cars?
Do you know what? This is the kind of story I was just thinking while reading this. This is the kind of stuff that scares the hell out of my parents, and it shouldn't scare the hell out of me, because I'm getting old now, and it scares the hell out of me. I mean, there's got to be specific circumstances in which this is going to work, admittedly, but the fact that you can even do that, and you could take something that's supposedly, you know, a kinetic device like a car and make it behave at will is not a good thing.
Look, I think the lesson here from this story is if two people with a MacBook Pro approach you and want to plug in to the port down by your parking brake, don't let them.
Yeah, and sit in your back seat.
Yeah, we're just going to sit back here and mess with you.
And get a ride.
Don't let them in.
They were able to control the vehicle from the laptop that wasn't physically connected. I believe one of the guys was walking next to the Prius with his laptop, and then he walked into it as it was moving because he was controlling it. And they seem to have more control than just when they're physically jacked in.
Yeah, and I joke, but I get the fact that even though they may not be doing it exactly the way theoretically it could be done wirelessly, which is the real dangers. That's what should scare you, is that somebody could be driving next to you and possibly do this. They're not demonstrating that, but they're demonstrating that if they can bridge that gap, this is what they could do. This is what access to the car is. This is a common tactic. I both love and hate these stories. I love them because they're saying, hey, car manufacturers, you need to secure your wireless networks because this is a theoretical possibility. I hate them because then the headline writers go, hackers can wreck your car while you're driving.
It's something to be aware of, as more and more of anything that you can do on board is based on a computer, and we can beam things from a variety of devices into our cars to make them, I don't know, read our tweets and be more awesome in general and help us get through driving more easily. This is just, again, this is the sort of thing that you have to be aware of, that it can be used for good, but it could possibly be used to do something extremely unsafe.
Yeah, some of these newer cars have things like OnStar, and they can be controlled via like a control center where you can unlock doors and things. It's just, how can you get access to that kind of mechanical stuff? It does have a little bit of terrifying nature, but it's just interesting. I just like this as a nerd. Like, oh, you can do this? There's 35 computers in that Prius, that these little machines that you can just change at will. I don't know why you'd want the dashboard to be wrong, but it's really intriguing to see that.
Well, if DARPA was involved in the funding, the end goal wasn't a YouTube video.
The U.S. has done some crazy stuff with their funding, so I wouldn't put it past them. But hopefully, it really is. It's seriously to raise awareness, because there are some car manufacturers that have some incredibly insecure wireless connections that they're putting in these cars, and that's irresponsible. So I'm glad this is raising awareness of that. It would be kind of cool to while you're driving a car, control another car, kind of slave it to you so you can drive two cars at once.
Kind of like towing without the actual tow.
Yeah.
Just tethering.
Actually, that's a perfectly practical reason for it, now that I think about it. Well, if you're worried about this, maybe you can get some help from Google's new Helpouts program.
Yeah. How to keep people from hacking your car. TechCrunch actually has a source. It says Google is working on a new platform called Helpouts, at least that's what it apparently is called internally, that's using cloud services to power live real-time commerce. My first reaction was like, what are we talking about? Like home shopping network via Google or something? It's a little bit more of individuals or businesses being able to buy and sell services to each other via live video using something like the Hangouts platform that already exists. So a seller could make a profile, then there's kind of a reputation management built in, kind of like how it's on eBay. And then as a buyer, you would search and discover based on what you're interested in. So health consultations, for example, fitness classes, appliance repair support, cooking lessons, yoga stuff. Google apparently has partnered with a variety of companies you might have heard of. One Medical Group, Sears, Weight Watchers, a variety of fitness teachers. And the idea is to offer both free and paid services to consumers via these helpouts. Of course, you could pay with Google Wallet if it was a paid for type of a class. So the interesting thing is, this is not something that I've never heard of before. There are a lot of startups in this space. Skillshare actually comes to mind as a service that links up people who are experts with people who are interested in taking these sorts of classes. I guess I think, all right, well, this is kind of an answer to Amazon, right? Amazon, as much as Google would like to be a place that you search for products, I think most people equate Amazon with the place to buy products. Could Google be the place to go for services and more of a knowledge base? Ewan, what do you think? Do you think this is a good idea?
I think this is the thorn in Google's side. I think they've got, whenever you have a product, you want it to become synonymous. The term becomes synonymous with that activity. Jacuzzi is about bubbling spas, not Roy Jacuzzi. And Google is synonymous with search. And I think they've never actually got that ability to look for revenue from a direct sale in the same way as Amazon have. And I think it really pains them. And they keep coming out with these ways of trying to get into your living room, get into your smartphone, get into your iPad, to try and get that direct end sale, and it always seems to fall flat on its face. It never seems to really work, and I think this is probably another one of those where the search engine element of this dovetails really quite nicely, but when it comes to pressing the trigger on the buy, That's what it's trying to overcome, perhaps, but I don't know that it will.
Yeah, I mean, when we're at the internet, when we're sitting down at our internet, and we want to get help, we want to get it for free, right? That's what we're used to. You do a search, right? You go to a forum, you ask a question, you don't pay for it. And then also, maybe it's just me and my personal misanthropy, but I don't really want to have to talk to somebody. I want to get the answer quickly without having to watch anything or say hello or negotiate any of that. Now, there are occasions when that's not true, when you want, like, a fitness class. Okay, I get that. But wouldn't I rather go to a fitness class in person than to do it at home? I guess maybe it's more
comfortable. But you'd start with a Google search, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and I'd find a local...
Google want the percentage of the end sale, and that's what they're never going to get,
You could be trained by, like, the best trainer on the planet instead of, like, the local person who's just in town, maybe. I guess that would be the hook.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Thinking,
okay,
this could be pretty huge for Google Plus in general. So, like, if businesses were on Google Plus and they say, hey, if you want to have customer support, you can just click this button. As long as it's not always pay. If there's, like, a freemium model where you can get a couple of help sessions for free. I'm just thinking the way I use Twitter sometimes, I will have an issue with my internet or something. I'll have an issue with something else. You can go on Twitter and basically ask Comcast something, and they will actually answer you as opposed to be on hold on the phone all the time. If Google could actually leverage that so users of Google Plus think to use Google Plus to go to the business site and then hang out for a help out to find out what's going on with this connection or what's going on with whatever service you're using, I think that could be really big for their giant plan of plusification of all things.
Could be a nice educational milieu as well.
Yeah, I love the idea of this. I've actually experimented here and there, especially with fitness classes.
Yeah?
Not stuff that's live necessarily, but stuff that it's sort of a subscription-based where you watch a video that, you know, was recorded sometime in the, you know, not too distant past. And it's really cool. I wonder how much these smaller companies are shaking in their boots, because once Google gets on board with this, the huge Google marketing machine, I mean, how could you possibly compete? Unless somehow a smaller company had great relationships with experts that, for whatever reason, just decided they'd never jump ship.
Maybe customer service, too. Instead of you paying, the company pays Google to enable the help out, and they have their own channel. So when you call customer service, you're not on hold pressing 2. You actually connected directly to somebody you talked to.
You could stare at them and go, I know you're reading the script. Stop reading the script. Look over here. Over
My
here.
Eyes are up here,
I'm
customer
telling
support.
You, this is the problem.
Yeah. Why are you eating lunch? I need
Put the
help.
Sandwich down and help me. We talked about the new beautiful Nexus 7 tablet yesterday with its high-res display and its thinness. We talked about the Google Chromecast dongle. It's already sold out. I think it's like 4 weeks now if you try to order one before you're going to get one. Mine shipped. I actually got my Netflix codes this morning.
Oh, wow. Good
in the
you.
Email. But a lot of people said, okay, this is the death of Google TV, right? Google's focus. Larry Page is trying to drill down these days. Well, Sundar Pichai told All Things D, Google TV is not going anywhere. It's a full-fledged Android for TV. More partnerships are being developed coming for CES. And Warren Riemann on Google Plus, as the next web pointed out, said, I'm still gainfully employed working on Google TV. It isn't dead. And yes, it will support Cast. And Pichai said, Chromecast can't do gaming. It's too much latency. But Google TV can. And so he's pointing you, say, Google TV is going to do all the things Chromecast can, but better. It seems like Chromecast is their way of popularizing internet television. That's what Pichai is saying. And then hopefully they can transition you to the Google TV. Ewan, can Chromecast work as a gateway drug for Google TV, or is Google just going to end up killing Google TV in a year?
That's always the fear with all of the other Google services that come out. Again, not looking to be overly negative, because applause to them massively for the fact that they do so many things for us and give them away free of charge in a lot of cases. But I just feel that they just don't get the traction with it. And I think with this one, it sounds really, really nice, but I can't see him getting the traction, and I agree with you. In a year's time, there may be no Google TV.
I don't see Google TV going away. Just as Chrome and Chrome OS and Android continue to coexist, even though it's baffling sometimes why that's true, it just continues to happen. And there's really, I could see Google trying to get both ones. As long as you have that Cast, because I think the official protocol is Google Cast, and that works on Chromecast and the Google TV. If that becomes a standard, and that's in smart televisions and it's in everything else, that means that Google TV isn't what we originally thought it was going to be, this big search for everything. We can find everything. It's, yeah, it can do search of limited things. But what you really want to do is take your device and send video over. I think Google TV is going to be, it won't be the forefront, but this Google Cast thing, Chromecast, will probably be huge. I was talking to Jason yesterday how it could have killed Google TV if they had an HDMI pass-through on the Chromecast. Like, that would have been the exact same thing. But this, since it takes up one HDMI port and that's your dedicated viewing experience, it's not quite killing Google TV yet.
I think the Google TV thing, is, it's like, it's almost as if Google has shelved it a little bit. Yeah, Google TV was supposed to be this big deal, and it's kind of like we're all still sitting around saying, is it good enough? Why don't more people want to use it? Chromecast comes along, and it's like, oh, awesome, content that already exists. I watch it on my TV. Everybody likes that idea.
And $35, I'm in.
Exactly, and I don't think Google cares that much as long as we start making Google synonymous with watching of content. So, yeah, the Google TV thing, as Chromecast takes off, and I think it will because it makes a lot of sense. It'll just, the two of them will start to become one larger product in the minds of people, especially people who, you know, aren't necessarily all that familiar with AirPlay. Yes, I showed my mom AirPlay for the first time last night. She was like, wow, that's amazing.
You could do that?
Yeah. And there are a lot of, you know, Chromecast is going to delight people in the exact same way the first time they try it, and it works out really well. So that, once you have people saying, yeah, I use Google, Google helps me watch lots of content on a variety of devices, then you figure out how Google TV can give them something extra.
Yeah, not to mention Google TV kind of feels right now like it's firmly in that experimental phase, even though it's a couple of years old. Like, they're kind of keeping it in their back pocket. They want to make the deals because they know Apple's working on making the deals for their own stuff, too. They want to be able to do that. I don't think Google TV is going away anytime soon. If all of that fails in a couple of years and Chromecast becomes this big behemoth that overshadows it entirely, maybe then. But right now, definitely not.
Yeah, I think
Sarah's point...
Yeah, go ahead, Ewan.
I was going to say, I think Sarah's point there is exactly right in the fact that it doesn't seem to matter, though, whether what Google does makes sense or not. It's whether they get the penetration into the market and the traction.
Exactly.
And buying a piece of hardware for something from Google is an alien concept to 95% of the people that have heard of Google. It's, you know, us 5%, 2% that are in the tech verse just don't mind that. But the general public don't get the idea of buying something to access something from Google. It's just not, they don't comprehend that.
Yeah, and it would not make sense for Google to kill the Google TV project right now, because Chromecast, even if you go to the retail shelves and you buy the thing because you just find out what it is and how cheap it is your entry point. If Google TV is ever going to succeed, this is how it succeeds. People get to know, oh, Google does this, and they come out with a better Google TV. My guess is right now Google is holding off on killing Google TV, saying, look, let's do Chromecast, let's get it out there. And let's make one last push for Google TV. This is our way to win, because where they win is when they get the bigger box with more stuff in your living room. Although there's an argument to be made that Chromecast as a dongle could just do that in the future. If you did make a little bigger, add an HDMI pass through, have a beefier version for $70.
So then some point you give it its own little set-top box. You know, have
it's just it's a really big stick hanging.
Yeah, I mean, and then you get a Google TV with Chromecast built into it, and then you've got the best of all worlds with the gaming and all that other stuff.
You'd have to give it more than 256K.
Well, yes, exactly. That's why the Google TV box.
That's why you need Google TV.
Exactly.
Come full circle. All right, let's go to the randomizer. Chipotle faked a Twitter hack, according to Mashable. Yesterday, Chipotle was celebrating their 20th anniversary with a 20-day-long treasure hunt called Adventurito. And suddenly a bunch of Twitter posts came up. They were talking about this on This Week in Google. They were hilarious. It seemed like somebody was accidentally typing in their password, didn't realize they were using
the... days ago, right?
Yeah. Well, Mashable had the story yesterday.
This was yesterday.
It probably was a couple of days ago that it happened, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, Chipotle came out and said, oh, yeah, we did that on purpose. We thought that it really fit well within the context of our 20th anniversary promotion, where we were putting clues in all sorts of things. We had clues pop up in a lot of places and thought that incorporating something into our social media presence would fit well into that promotion.
Well, I don't want to toot my own horn or anything, but when this was all coming down live, I think this was like Monday or Tuesday, I did tweet, I call BS on this whole thing, because it's just too perfect. You can go back and look and see that I did, in fact, say that, because these things have really become stupid. I mean, really? This is some sort of treasure hunt type of a thing? it's just a way to get people to be like, somebody's off the rails at Chipotle. They've got an intern running the show. It's like nobody, well, I'm sure there are people who really don't understand Twitter, but nobody is that clueless.
4,000 followers the day of the hack.
There you go, proof.
Hack.
Yes. Although I'll block that, you know, that
sorry
word
about
up.
My,
I thought you said you were trying not to toot
emphasis.
Your own horn.
21st of July.
This sounds like tooting to me.
There's pics. It must have happened.
I call bulls.
That's why I do a social media
show. Do you even have
show.
Chipotle in the UK? Is that just a US
no,
thing?
Nothing at all.
Yeah. Do you, you have burritos, though, so you can sort of understand.
You understand the concept of Mexican food.
We get vicariously, and I'm not sure they're the real thing.
No, you get fake burritos. Ah, fake Twitter hack. Perfect. Goes along
there
with
we go.
Burritos.
Yeah, I smell
I was with a friend
a
last night who works in security, and he was telling me that just as a proof of concept in their office that afternoon, they faked up a DNS server and a Wi-Fi for a Netgear open router that wasn't open. It was theirs. And they just left it open, see who would try and get on it. And they had they created a fake Facebook page, and the people were logging in to try and get in, even though it wasn't HTTPS. And they were just giving them password after password after password after password after password.
Wow.
Yeah. And people are stupid.
There are some.
They deleted it all. There was no wrongdoing or anything, but
it's like, isn't that the lamest thing in the world? It's like, yeah, we just made that up.
It's lame, but it worked.
It's lame, but it worked.
That's the even lamer thing.
I don't know. I need you to suffer, Chipotle.
Or was it not intentional? And then they spun it as being intentional.
Oh, conspiracy theory.
They're faking,
right? They're like, oh, well, how do we like make this not seem like we have absolutely no idea what we're doing?
Right. All right, well, we can be sure that things are happening on the calendar, and they're true, right, Sarah?
That's right, and I hope that you have a cake ordered, because tomorrow, Friday, July 26th, is SysAdmin Day, and that's a day that people should be celebrated for doing things like administering your network.
If you access the internet, which you probably are if you're watching this, you need to appreciate your system.
Yeah. Give somebody a pie. If you were a sysadmin, you'd prefer that.
Heck yeah.
Ask them what they want and then give it to them.
Want a pie?
Even if it's
they're a sysadmin, they probably want an email.
That is the last thing they want.
Yeah.
File a ticket with them. Thank you.
P1, what pie do you want?
Send your sysadmin an email and tell them how much you
actually
appreciate
file a bug asking them what pie they want. They might appreciate that.
They might like that. Yeah. Also, the Nokia Lumia 1020 is launching on AT&T this Friday, the 26th as well.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Alan. He says, hi, like you guys, I'm excited about the Chromecast. I waited until the end of the day to order, so mine won't be arriving for 3 to 4 weeks. The SDK is nice, but Google says it needs to approve any app that wants to use the Cast API. On the other hand, I was thinking of a couple of neat possibilities. With respect to crappy hotel Wi-Fi, you could tether Chromecast to your fast LTE connection on your phone, assuming you could afford the bandwidth. Likewise, although Chromecast gets its data from the cloud, when you're at home at least, you could use a Cast-enabled DLNA app, lots in the Play Store, to stream media from your local DLNA server. It would be great when Plex and XBMC have Cast buttons.
Ooh, using Plex or XBMC. I like that.
Serving up. I love that. Thank you, Alan,
nifty,
for that.
Alan.
Got another email from Dan who says, I was listening to the show and wanted to chime in on the people switching from AT&T's unlimited plan to alternative shared data plans. I'm somebody who until recently had an unlimited plan and I switched, not because I have more devices to tether, but because I found my unlimited plan wasn't really unlimited.
Dun, dun, dun.
AT&T put in a policy where they throttle your bandwidth after you exceed 3 gigabytes of data usage per month. That throttled speed was frustratingly slow. So I could either hold on to the idea of unlimited bandwidth or upgrade to a limited plan that wouldn't throttle my usage over 3 gigs. My guess is that some people who switch to limited data plans switch for that reason.
Yeah, T-Mobile does the same thing with their unlimited plans. Sprint's the only one that doesn't.
I've still got an unlimited plan, AT&T, on my iPad, and I don't notice.
You never hit it, huh?
Well, I find it hard to believe that I don't, since I do so much testing, but I don't notice a slowdown, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I just don't notice.
Is it always slow? Is that the thing is?
I mean,
you just got used to it.
Evenly slow.
Life in the slow lane.
Yeah. I complain a lot about slow internet, so...
There
who
you.
Knows? Maybe it's just all,
it all seems...
being throttled and it's not in my head.
All right. Well, that is it for our show today. You and Rankin, thank you so much for joining us from London.
It was a pleasure.
Tell folks what's going on at the British Tech Network at BritishTechNetwork.com.
British Tech Network, we've got a pile of shows. Some of them about tech, some of them aren't. Very few of them take themselves seriously. We have loads of fun each week podcasting about all kinds of things. We've got a comic show on at the moment, which a guy called Andrew Stevens is doing. He used to pen the Mutant Hero Turtles. And we've also got Carlos Esquerra coming on that show in a couple of weeks, the man who started off Dread, so that'd be well worth listening to.
Good
and
we've
got a ton of other shows, tons of other shows that are just loads of fun.
Go check it out, BritishTechNetwork.com. It's a good time. Thank you, Ewan.
Pleasure.
And don't forget about our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, where you can suggest stories for the show. You can vote on other people's suggestions. You can vote on your own suggestions, make comments. We look at it every day when we come up with the lineup for the show. Go there. We are always available at twit.tv/TNT. You can also give us a call. We may not pick up. You can leave a message, 260-TNT-SHOW, and send us an email, tnt@twit.tv. We will be back tomorrow with more tech news than you could possibly imagine. Or maybe
shake a stick
at it.
Don't shake sticks at it. You might put your eye out. We'll see you there.
It's just news. More news that can poke eyes in the face.